Hello, London.
This Hello. Is
Big Science FM. I'm Ed Gerstner.
And I'm Anna Armstrong.
And for the next hour, we're going to run an experiment in trying to explore the fundamental concepts of science, and in particular physics. My lovely host, Anna, is a biologist, and she knows nothing about physics.
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all. So I'm going to try and teach her, and I'm going to try and teach you as well. But it's not just a lecture. What we're going to try and do here is explore, or rather present, physics as simple ideas. Because really, I mean, that's the thing is, a lot of people, when I meet people at parties, and they say, "What do you do?" I say, "I'm a physicist." Well, now a journalist, but when I was a physicist. And they go, "Oh, I hate physics. It's so difficult." But it's not really. Well, I don't think so. And I think I'm right.
I'm not sure.
Anna's not sure. But the thing is, physics boils down to just a couple of really simple ideas. And those simple ideas are quite, well, simple. And it's the implications of those ideas when you put them together, and they sort of if you lead where those simple ideas go in the physical universe, they lead you to these bizarre, amazing, fascinating ideas that often make no sense. But when you do experiments, it turns out that this is exactly how the universe works. So these are the sort of ideas, the connections between simple concepts and the whole universe, the material universe that we see, stars, iPods, even the solidness of the desk you might be sitting at now, to human life, to all organic life. All of that is all just derived from this handful, probably more than a handful, but basically simple concepts. And so I'm going to try and teach Anna some of those concepts. She won't be a physicist at the end, but not many people are. The other thing, it's not all about maths. I was telling Anna recently, today in fact, she said, I was never good at physics because I was never good at maths. And the thing is, if you need to be good at maths, you haven't understood the physics. To do physics, As a research scientist, you do need maths. But to understand physics as a layperson, as anyone, you don't need the maths. Because, as I said, it comes down to these simple ideas. So over the next 6 weeks so far, we're going to cover a whole bunch of things. Today we're going to talk about electric fields, magnetic fields, and light, and how light, or rather the universality of how light works, leads to a whole bunch of really wacky things, nuclear energy, and eventually to how you can create all these bizarre subatomic particles in the LHC, for example, at CERN. Next week, we're going to talk about extensions of, again, this idea that light moves the same everywhere in the universe, no matter how fast you're moving, and talk about more bizarre things about space-time and how it warps, and then go on to how gravity and mass and time travel and redshifts and a whole bunch of wonderful things. And then later on we'll talk about atoms and molecules and subatomic particles like they're looking for in the LHC. And then we're going to talk about how everything in the universe is just waves of probability. That's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, I don't understand this at all. I really don't understand that. Yeah, I think that will take some explaining, I think.
You'll understand by week four, I'm sure.
Maybe.
But it's not about, a famous scientist once said, I can't remember which one it was, doesn't really matter. That if you've understood quantum mechanics, and that's what this waves of probability idea comes from, if you think you've understand Or rather, if quantum mechanics doesn't disturb you, you haven't understood
it. You don't get it. All
right. You don't get it. So I'm hoping to disturb you.
Brilliant, brilliant.
Disturb you and explain to you in equal parts. And then eventually we'll move on to how the universe is a casino. But we've got a long way to get before then. Yeah. So the other thing that I want to do is if, as you're listening to the program, ideas, questions come up in your mind, if you think, hang on, that can't be right, we want you to get in touch with us on Twitter using the hashtag #BigScienceFM. That's one word, the hash symbol, and then one word, BigScienceFM. That's the hashtag for the show. And we've got a Twitter feed, which is @BigScienceFM. That's one word, BigScienceFM. So if you've got questions, if you think you've understood it, but you're not sure, tell us what you think you've understood. And I want this show to be, it's not a lecture, it's a conversation. Because that's how you learn. You don't learn by rote. You don't learn by someone proclaiming these things to you. You learn by them saying something, and you're saying, hang on, I don't get that. That doesn't make any sense. That's nuts! And then they get to come back and say, why do you think it's nuts? Well, I think it's like this. Well, actually, you're right. It is nuts. And this is why we think it's true. So, what first? First we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about light. Mm-hmm. Now, do you know what light is, Anna?
Well, I think it's a wave.
A wave of what? Exactly. Sorry?
Energy.
It's a wave of energy, yes. Energy, everything is energy.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that later in the show. Yeah. We'll explain why. The textbooks will tell you that light is an electromagnetic wave. That means nothing to most people.
No.
So we have to go back we should probably go back to electricity and magnetism.
Yes.
Okay, so you have some idea of what...
I think we should start with the real basics.
The real basics, electrons.
Yes, let's start with electrons.
Let's start with electrons.
Yes.
So everything in the universe, most of the things in the universe that you see in, let's say the world, are mostly made of atoms, which are made of neutrons, protons, and electrons.
Yes.
We can ignore protons and neutrons for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
They make up the nucleus. So it looks a bit like the solar system, but actually that's a simplification. So
mm-hmm.
don't put too much weight on that idea of how an atom looks or works.
Yeah.
But okay, so think of the sun as the nucleus, and that contains a whole mass of neutrons and protons.
Yes.
And around that, are electrons.
Yes.
Electricity is essentially electrons. And when you put a whole bunch of atoms together, those electrons from different atoms interact with each other. So if you put two atoms together...
That's how they can bond.
That's how they bond.
Yeah.
Exactly that. Okay.
Ionic bonding.
Ionic bonding, that's more about when you get, that's more about electrostatic attraction.
Okay.
So so protons are positive.
Yes.
Neutrons are neutral. Yeah. Electrons are negative.
Yeah.
This is the idea of charge.
Yeah.
So charge is this, it's a fundamental property of these particles.
Yeah.
So you bring two atoms together.
Yeah.
They swap their they actually don't swap them. They share them constantly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You bring a third atom in, it's sharing all its electrons. You bring a whole bunch of electrons together and they share their electrons in this big soup.
Yes.
Now the way they share them determines the properties of the thing that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And for metals, they share them in a kind of a loose way.
Yeah.
So the electrons can move about quite freely.
Mm.
And electrons moving through a metal under an electric field is electricity. So essentially, electricity is just the movement of electrons.
Mm-hmm.
It can be other things. So it can be movement of ions, movement of protons.
But something charged.
And something charged.
Yeah.
Electricity is the movement of something charged.
Yeah.
Now, a couple of hundred years ago, they discovered this electricity and a bunch of Who discovered it? Well, I think it was the Romans, actually.
Really?
Who discovered electricity per se. They discovered that when you rub certain objects, they can have these weird effects. They can repel each other. They can repel bits of dust or bits of paper or such things.
Static,
and they like, and that's static electricity. Yeah. That's when you get different objects charged differently.
Yeah.
But electricity is essentially the movement of charge.
Yes.
Under an electric field.
But it doesn't have to be electrons.
It doesn't have to. But it mostly is for our purposes.
Yeah.
It mostly is. Yeah. Electrons. So in metals, it's mostly electrons.
And can you just explain what an electron is?
Oh, that's a difficult question, because an electron is a fundamental particle.
Okay, what do you mean by fundamental?
By fundamental, it means it can't be broken down into something smaller.
Yes.
So it's just this thing. It has certain fundamental properties. That we call quantum properties.
It doesn't really help me to understand. If you explain what an electron is, what would be like the definition or the classic definition? Because it's surely not just that it's got a negative charge.
Actually, mostly it is. It will become a little more complicated, but not much more complicated. So it's a particle. It's a fundamental particle. Mm. There are these things called fundamental particles, and we're not exactly sure what their structure is.
And how do you know it's fundamental? Like, how do you know it can't be broken down into something else?
Because we never have been able to break it down into something else.
But maybe that's just because we're a bit limited in what we can do.
That could be. That could very well be. For the moment, we're just assuming it doesn't.
Okay.
In fact, all of physics just assumes for the moment that the electron can't be broken, that it's fundamental.
Right.
And because we've been looking in accelerators like the LHC, because
the
we've
Large
been looking
Hadron
at
Collider.
The Large Hadron Collider, exactly. because we've been looking for these gigantic, we're smashing particles together.
Yes.
And we'll get later on in this program, I hope, that we'll get to a point where we understand why smashing particles together helps us explore particle physics. Mm-hmm. But for the moment, the working assumption of all of physics is that an electron is just this particle with a quantum of charge. That's this.
But I'm not actually sure I even know what a particle is. Like, a particle, fine. But what is a particle?
That's an excellent question. Some people think that it's made up of strings. That's string theory.
But then what's a string?
That's really good. Okay, so now we're getting to a deep, deep, deep philosophical question. If the universe was sitting on the back of a turtle, what's the turtle sitting on?
Yes.
You could say it's sitting on another turtle. Okay, what's that turtle sitting on?
Yeah.
It's sitting on yet another turtle.
Yeah.
And if that were the case, you could keep counting down turtles.
And you never get there.
And you may never get there. But the thing is, we've got to the smallest turtle.
Yeah.
We found, well, no. An electron is the smallest turtle we found.
Okay.
Okay. So an electron is this particle. We don't fully know what its structure is. The working assumption is that it has no structure. It's a point charge. That creates a lot of problems for theoretical physics.
Yeah,
so that issue there is not yet resolved.
And, like, I don't really know what point charge means either, but maybe we can talk about that another time.
A point, a classical point is something that has no extent. It doesn't have any, like, you're about a foot wide, maybe, and half a foot deep. You've got this spatial extent, you've well-defined it. A point charge has no...
I don't know, but to me this sounds like it doesn't really exist.
A little bit. But actually, when we get on to topic, was it three or four that I said? It was... anyway, we'll get to a point where actually we find out that an electron isn't exact. It is sometimes a point charge, but sometimes it's a blurred out wave.
Right. Right.
That's the weirdness of quantum mechanics. That'll be a bit later on
where we're
a bit more confident about
what an electron is or
talking about these fundamental physics.
Yeah.
Okay, so working assumption, electron is a point charge.
Yeah.
As it moves, it embodies electricity. So moving electrons is electricity. So electricity is just moving electrons.
Just flowing along.
As electrons move, as electricity flows, it also creates magnetic fields.
Mm.
So you know what a magnet is, right?
Mm.
Okay, so then they found out that electric currents and magnetic fields and electric fields and charge, they're all part of one big unified thing.
So what do you mean it forms a magnetic field?
Okay, when an electric current flows down a wire, it creates a magnetic field that circles around the wire. So they discovered this, a bunch of clever people. Mm. We don't need their names. A bunch of clever people, because you'll never remember. A bunch of clever people found that electric force, that's the force between two different charged or two same charged particles.
Yeah.
That the electric force and the magnetic force were all wrapped up in they were essentially the same force, but in different guises.
Right. Okay. So as you get the electrons flowing along,
they create magnetic fields. And when you move magnetic fields, they cause electrons to move.
Yeah.
So one creates the other creates the one, and they interact. Now, a bunch of people created these laws, these mathematical formulae for how electric fields generate magnetic field, how electric currents generate magnetic fields,
What does an electric field comprise? What constitutes an electric field?
Oh, an electric field is basically any region of space that causes a charge to be attracted or repelled from it.
Mm-hmm.
So a force field is something that causes a free object to move.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So an electric field will cause an electron to move in the opposite direction of the electric field because the electron has a negative charge, so it's repelling.
Yeah.
And it'll cause a proton, which has a positive charge, to move along the field.
Yeah.
And magnetic fields do the same thing for magnetic poles.
Mm.
And so these... Anyway, so all these things interact. If they found that all these things were interacting. Now, the maths is a bit complex. The thing is, for the current discussion, you don't need to know the details of how these things work. But they wrote four equations down for how electric fields and magnetic fields and charges and poles work. And these are known as Maxwell's equations.
Right.
Maxwell, James Clerk Maxwell, didn't invent them. Other clever people invent them. But he put them together. And when he put them together, he noticed that a mathematical solution of bringing all these equations together created a wave.
Right.
If you look at the maths of it, the answer you get out from putting these equations together gives you a solution called a wave solution.
So what do these equations actually describe? Do they describe...
There's one describes how if you have two wires next to each other and you've got a current moving down in one and up in the other, one of these equations describes the force between those two wires.
Right.
So two current carrying wires will have a force between them. So one of the equations is about how those wires come together.
Mm-hmm.
Now another equation tells you how the force between two like charges, the repulsive force between two electrons.
Yeah.
Another one tells you about magnetic fields and things like that.
Yeah.
Put these together and you get a wave solution. And they realized that wave solution described how the waves of light moved.
So it describes how these electrons move, basically.
It describes how the electrons interact when they get near each other.
And what that interaction results in.
And how a system of charges and magnetic fields and electric fields, how that system evolves,
moves,
how it operates.
Yeah.
So it's the mechanics of electricity, the electronics of electromagnetism.
Yeah.
And one of the results of these equations is light.
Right.
And then they realise that, that light is an electromagnetic wave. It's an electric field oscillating in one direction and a magnetic field oscillating in the perpendicular direction, and then light travels along those two perpendicular directions.
So it's a bit of a leap from going from these waves to light.
Yes, that's not the simple part. That is actually complex.
Okay.
The crazy thing that I want to get to is Einstein.
Yeah.
He was thinking about these things one day, and he thought, well, one of the things is that Maxwell's equations, the laws that govern magnetism and electricity, are pretty much the same everywhere they were ever measured. These are fundamental laws.
So what would be an example of one law?
So if you get two wires carrying a current, a current in either direction, the force between those wires is the same no matter what frame of reference. No matter where you measure it. Doesn't matter if you're traveling in a car or if you're in Germany, or if you're in Princeton in the US.
That's based on the assumption that on just what's being measured. So
yeah, no, every time you measure these laws, every time you do an experiment to measure these laws should be the same. And if we think of them as fundamental, if we think that that's how charges and magnetic poles interact.
But that's how they work on the Earth. But how do you know they work the same in, like, beyond the Earth?
Well, we don't know. Well, we do know now because you can measure their effects through light from stars.
Mm.
Okay, but Einstein was a theoretician, and he started with the working assumption that these laws of electricity and magnetism should be the same everywhere in the universe.
Right. I mean, it's a big assumption.
Well, no, it's not. What he was doing, he was saying, okay, the one of the things that scientists want to do is find unified laws, laws that apply all the time, and in lots of different contexts.
But that's why it's a big assumption, surely.
Yes, it was a big assumption. Turned out to be correct, but the thing was, he said, okay, let's assume he didn't assume it and then move on. He said, what if the laws, because we want them to be, scientists want these laws to be the same everywhere. So he said, okay, what if these laws are the same in every frame of reference? Now, do you know what a frame of reference is?
I don't know. I guess it's something to do with how you observe it or where you observe it.
A little bit. So our frame of reference is in London, moving on the surface of the Earth. The Earth is rotating at about, if I recall correctly, about 1,000 miles an hour. Well, the edge is moving around at about 1,000 miles an hour. And the Earth is moving around the sun at about, I think it's 30,000 miles a second. Really fast.
Right, it's really fast.
Okay. Yeah. So, also, physicists would like to think that the fundamental laws of electromagnetism should be the same regardless of where on the Earth you're traveling. So, okay,
right.
If you're on one side of the Earth, you're traveling in exactly the opposite direction than if you're traveling on the other side of the Earth, or if you send a spacecraft off, or if you're stationary and then the Earth hurtles off away from you. The laws of electricity and magnetism should be the same. Ideally, it would be nice if the laws of electricity and magnetism were the same in all those frames of reference.
Like, irrespective of how you're moving or
irrespective of how fast we're going, irrespective of where we are in the universe, those laws should be the same. And then he thought, okay, if those laws are the same everywhere, then that means that if those laws determine how light moves, that means light moves should move the same everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that the laws of electricity and magnetism tell you is they tell you how fast light moves.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They tell you how fast that wave is moving.
Okay.
So, if the laws of electricity and magnetism are the same, regardless of how fast you're moving, that means that light has to travel the same regardless of what frame of reference you're in. I've just got a question from one of our listeners. the laws of the universe aren't the same everywhere because the universe is ever expanding.
So that changes
everything? Yes and no. The laws of... At any given point in the universe, the laws of electricity and magnetism, it's not all the laws. Not everything is always the same everywhere. And not all phenomena are always the same in every different frame of reference.
But these particular laws that apply to how quickly light travels.
Well, how electricity works.
Yeah.
And then they determine how fast light travels.
And that's uniform.
And so
that's the assumption.
If the laws are the same everywhere, then light should travel at a constant speed everywhere.
But did you know what? The thing that I can't really get my head around is how on earth do you kind of test this?
Okay, we'll get to that. So then he took that assumption.
Yeah.
And then he said, okay, so that means light moves at a constant velocity everywhere in the universe.
Yeah.
Now we look at the universe.
Yeah.
Light is how we look at the universe.
Mm.
So if light moves the same regardless of how you're moving through the universe, that creates all these weird implications. If I'm moving, this is called the twins paradox.
Mm.
We're twins. We're living on the Earth.
Mm.
And then I get in a spaceship and I travel away from the Earth at close to the speed of light.
Yeah.
And then I come back. In order to make the speed of light constant in every frame of reference, then time has to change and space has to change. And that's one of the... If the laws of electromagnetism don't care about how fast you're moving, then the speed of light doesn't care how fast you're moving. As a consequence, time and space, to someone who's watching you moving, have to care about how you're moving.
I don't know. I'm not sure I quite understand that. I'm not sure I quite understand that.
Okay. That's a challenge.
Let's unpack it.
Let's unpack it. This is where I think we meet a difficulty of radio, because this is where you have to draw lines and show why it is that if the speed of light moves. Okay, so if
go with the example that you were giving of twins, one of them goes off into space at the speed of light.
That was one of the implications.
Right.
Oh, that's a difficult one. But maybe it isn't as simple as all that. Maybe we'll play some music. I'll have a think about it and I'll get back to you. So let's cue up some music. Here we go. That was Thomas Dolby with Blinding Me with Science. And I think we have a problem here. I think I'm blinding Anna with science.
I didn't quite get the conclusion.
The conclusion.
So, because the assumption is that light travels at a constant speed no matter where you are in the universe. Is that right?
That's a consequence of one of the assumptions. Okay, the assumption is that electricity and magnetism, the laws that govern electricity and magnetism should be the same regardless of how fast you're traveling.
And hence light travels at the same
and
speed.
And because they determine the speed of light, if they're the same, then the speed of light has to be the same.
Mm.
So Einstein said, okay, if the speed of light is the same, regardless of how fast you're traveling, what does that mean?
Yes.
Let's make that assumption and let's try and decide what it is that assumption leads to. A lot of science is done about you start with these assumptions and then you go through the implications of those assumptions. And ideally you get to an experiment and then you do the experiment. And if the experiment is different from what your implications have predicted, then that probably means that your assumptions are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So he was exploring this idea, okay, we'd like the laws of electricity and magnetism to be the same in all frames of reference. That means the speed of light is the same in all frames of reference. What are the implications of that? Now, if you do the drawings and the maths and all that sort of stuff, the implications of that is that if the speed of light stays constant, time and space have to bend.
Mm.
They have to expand and contract in order to allow the speed of light to be constant.
Yeah. I think, like you say, that is a bit of a leap going from one, you know, that kind
that,
of
yeah.
that assumption no, to that. But we can assume that.
Yeah. Yeah. I said you didn't need maths to understand it. I think that was a bit of a leap of faith on my part.
So if the upshot is that space and time are not constant, what does that actually mean? What does it mean for space and time to be constant?
Okay, so there we go. One of the implications of that is the faster that you're traveling away from an observer
yeah.
on the Earth, the slower time moves for you.
Okay.
So time, it doesn't... So if you're on the spaceship traveling away from the Earth, time moves just as it always has. Because time is largely determined by these processes like electricity and magnetism. Electricity and magnetism determine your body clock. They determine the chemistry. They determine how you perceive the universe, because your body is governed by these laws.
Mm-hmm.
So time for you moves just as
it always has.
As it always
no
has.
No matter how quickly you're moving, even if you're moving at the speed of light.
Even if you're moving close to the speed of light. In fact, anything with mass can't travel at the speed of light in space.
Right.
Okay. So you're in the spaceship. You're shooting off to the stars at close to the speed of light.
Yeah,
Let's say you have a twin.
I don't notice anything different.
You won't notice anything different in the spaceship.
No.
Your twin on the Earth
has
this massive telescope.
Right.
She's looking at you through the telescope and notices you're moving incredibly slowly.
Why?
Everything you're doing is
Why?
Moving
really,
really slowly.
But I'm moving close to the speed of light, yeah?
Okay. Well, if you're moving close to the speed of light.
Yeah.
Think of the way that has to be like that is that think of pulses of light moving. Like, say you're sending a flashing signal. You're flashing... and think of these pulses of light traveling in space.
Yeah.
The faster you move away from the Earth, the more distance you're putting between those spaces, those pulses. And in one sense, it will look like those pulses are separated apart much further.
Right.
Okay. So that's. But it's more profound than that. In fact, what actually happens is that. Okay. Light is a wave, and its color is determined by its wavelength.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So longer waves are red,
mm-hmm.
and shorter waves are blue.
Mm.
As you travel off in your spaceship close to the speed of light.
Yeah.
In fact, it's changing the color of the light as well. That's not directly... That's the space essentially being extended. It's... If the speed of light is constant, then the space that the light is traveling through has to be stretched. Okay, you need to look at the diagrams on the pieces of paper.
No,
I'm not
just
explaining this very well.
So my twin is on Earth. I'm shooting off into the sky at the speed of light. It looks like I'm going very slowly from the Earth, and.
The spaceship looks like it's going very, very quick. But if you look inside the spaceship, you're pouring a cup of tea very, very, very slowly. Because you're traveling at close to the speed of light, in order for the speed of light in your frame of reference to remain exactly the same as the speed of light when you were on the Earth, time has to slow down for you. That's one of the consequences.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's amazing. So So for me in the spaceship, time has actually slowed down.
Yep.
to enable me to keep on doing what I'm doing.
So that's the wacky.
But I'm a bit confused. The person that's observing from Earth, what are they seeing? Are they seeing me shoot off at the speed of light?
They're seeing you shoot off at the speed of light. Yeah. But let's say that you had this telescope and they could see you going about your through the window. Sorry.
Yeah.
So you're in a glass spaceship.
Yes.
And they could see you going about your business, and you're going about it very, very slowly.
That's very weird.
Exactly. And you don't believe it, do you?
No.
No, you don't.
No. So they're seeing the spaceship shoot off, but they see the person in the spaceship
going about their business really slowly. And then you come back to the Earth.
Mm.
And in fact, your twin is now an old lady. And it feels like time has hardly moved for you.
Because it's gone so much quicker on the Earth.
Because you were actually have aged at a much slower rate relative to your your twin on the Earth. If you look back at the Earth...
Yeah. And that's purely because time is going very slowly.
And that's because time is going very slowly.
And time is going very slowly because I'm moving so fast.
Yes. Because you're moving so fast and because the speed of light has to be the same in your spaceship as it is on the Earth. Now, that's something that's known as the twins paradox.
Right.
Resolving that is exactly what happened. That if you could get a spaceship that traveled close to the speed of light, then that is exactly what would happen. Now, there are a whole bunch of reasons why we know that this is part of what's known as special relativity. One of the reasons we know that special relativity is, in fact, as wacky as it is in fact true, is because you can measure these cosmic rays. There are certain particles that are coming from the cosmos, these energetic particles, and they hit the atmosphere. And when they hit the atmosphere, they create these other particles. Now, we know about these particles, and we know how long they live for, because we've created them in places like CERN. Mm. Now, we know exactly what their average lifetime is, and then they decay into other particles. They decay very, very quickly.
But
we can actually detect these particles on the Earth. We shouldn't be able to detect them on the surface of the Earth. They're created when these cosmic rays hit the atmosphere, the top parts of the atmosphere. And we shouldn't be able to detect them on the Earth, but we can. We shouldn't be able to detect them because they should have decayed before they reached the Earth. But their decay was slowed down because also, they're moving at very, very, very fast speeds. So that's one reason why we know that's... This is the case.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So, anyway.
Okay. I didn't entirely get that.
That's okay.
We can...
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. Okay. So, one of the consequences of electricity and magnetism being the same, regardless of how fast you're moving... is the speed of light is the same.
But time has to change.
But time and space have to change. Time and space both have to change.
So
and that's wacky, and we do experiments, and that's how it works.
But I don't think I understand how space changes. What does that mean for space to change?
It changes with respect to... Okay, the way that Einstein constructed it is by thinking about space not as the normal three-dimensional space that we see. There's up and down and left and right and forward and back. But four-dimensional space, and he included time.
Mm-hmm.
So we're moving.
So time and space are inseparable.
So time and space are inseparable.
So you can't have one changing without the other.
Then. So in fact, you've got warping of time and space, and the way they interact, they interact in a way that basically makes all the mass come out in the wash. And one of the bizarre consequences of that is that essentially, if you think of moving through, what you've got to do is think about moving through time the same way as you think about moving through space. So we're moving through space.
Yeah.
It's okay. We're not moving through space in the studio here, But imagine you're in a car driving along Borough High Street.
Yeah.
You're moving through space. In fact, that changes how you move through time.
Right, okay.
So, and in fact, everyone is always and everything is always moving at exactly the speed of light. My producer is looking at me very, very doubtfully.
But, like, I'm sorry, what are we moving in relation to?
Where we are now.
But I don't get it because, so we're, like, I'm sitting here, I'm moving at the speed of light in relation to what? What am I?
Time. So you have to, there's a conversion factor to, if you think of time as another, it's like an aspect of space. If you slow down, or rather, if you speed up in space, you have to slow down in time in order that we all can always travel at the speed of light through this four-dimensional space that includes time.
But then what is that happening within? Like, so this, we're moving in space and time at the speed of light. I'm not quite sure. Okay, so that means that light is also moving in space and time.
Yep.
So, but then what, to say that we're moving means that we're moving within something or relative to something, doesn't it?
Well, okay, so this is all, there is no absolute reference. So this is about working out how time is perceived in different frames of reference. So your twin who's flown off into space, then these ideas are to work out how she will age relative to someone on the Earth. So it's about seeing how things move in relative to each other. There's no absolute frame. Okay. As far as we know, there's no absolute frame in the universe.
So no absolute frame of reference.
No. They spent a long time trying to find an absolute frame of the universe to make all this come out in the wash.
Yeah.
There was this idea that the speed of light wasn't constant in these different frames of reference, but it was constant with respect to this ghostly background substance, which they called the ether.
Right.
No one has ever been able to find the ether. They've done famous experiments. It's known as the Michelson-Morley experiment to try and detect our movement through the ether, because one side of the Earth is traveling in one direction through this cosmic ether, and the other side of the Earth isn't traveling in exactly the opposite direction through the cosmic ether. So you should be able to measure the laws of electricity and magnetism, the speed of light on different sides of the Earth, and see if we're moving through the ether, you should be able to see a difference. And no one ever has. They still do these experiments.
Yeah, but I don't quite understand how you arrive at the conclusion that we're all moving at the speed of light.
Okay, that's one of the consequences of how you work out how things warp. That's how Einstein said, okay, how do we think about time warping? How do we think about space warping?
I don't think we've really introduced time warping. What's that?
Ah, time warping, that's time slowing down, is just a warping of time.
So
it's like a warping
warp,
of space.
That just means
a changing the dimension.
Right, okay.
So if you think of time as a dimension, time slowing down is time being warped so that it slows down.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So think of if you're in a car and you have to travel at the speed limit. If you travel north at 70 miles an hour, and then you find a road that makes you travel east.
Don't ask me any maths questions.
No. No, this is not a maths question. If you're traveling north at 70 miles an hour and then the road turns sharply east, then you have to turn east at 70 miles an hour. How fast are you moving north?
I was moving 70 miles an hour north.
But when you took the road east, how fast were you moving when you took the road east?
I was going 70 miles an hour.
But you're going 70 miles an hour east. How fast are you moving north?
Oh, I'm not going north.
Exactly. So you're not moving at all north. So if you're zero, so if your car has to move at constantly 70 miles an hour, then it can't, it can only move 70 miles an hour in one direction.
Okay.
So if it's moving 70 miles an hour north, it has to be moving at 0 miles an hour east.
Right.
If it's moving at 70 miles an hour east, then it has to be moving at 0 miles an hour north or south.
Hmm.
So if time is just like space and we're constantly moving at the speed of light, if you're moving at the speed of light in time,
yeah,
then that means that you're moving at zero velocity in space.
Okay, because you can only move in...
Because you can only move at exactly the speed of light in any direction. Now, when you're not moving, you're moving at the speed of light in time. But when you start moving, then you have to slow down your speed in time.
Right.
Because you can only ever move at the speed of light.
Right.
And because light moves at the speed of light, time for light in the life's frame of reference has stopped.
So
you don't need to worry about the implications of that. That's just a
if anyone was to move at the speed of a light, there would be no time for them.
Yes. Time would. I mean, in their own frame of reference, it would seem like that time was.
But
I don't know. Okay. There we go back to.
How can that be possible? Because
you can't move at the speed of light. That's the one thing. You can't move at the speed of light in space.
But light is moving at the speed of light, but it exists within time.
Yes, that's it's actually constrained. It's constrained by mass. And we're starting to run out of time. I think I need to come to a conclusion. I think that's going to be my conclusion for this week, is that if the laws of electromagnetism are the same everywhere in all frames of the universe, that means that the speed of light is constant,
timeless.
Is timeless, in a sense. I don't know how very well I've done this week. I think I'm going to have to try and do better this week. As I said, this show is an experiment. I did want to get to the A-bomb by the end of today.
Oh, no.
We could do that next week.
Yes.
These things take longer. I don't know how successful I've been. But we haven't had many questions via Twitter. Maybe that means no one's listening. We have another question from our producer. That's always a good thing. Does time actually exist, or is it just a concept that enables us to measure the speed at which things happen, move, and pass? Yes. Yes, essentially. Well, but I mean, what does that mean? Yeah. I heard a wise man once said, "Is God created time to stop everything happening at once?"
But I have to say, I don't understand the disconnect between the light and time.
Between light and time.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have to pick that up next week.
Okay.
For the moment, how long have we got?
2 minutes.
It's a long time on radio.
It's a long time on radio. Am I allowed to play something that goes for longer than 2 minutes?
You have to finish that then.
I have to, but the music.
Yep.
The music I can play, and then, well, it'll.
Whatever you do has to finish.
Whatever I do has to finish at 10. I got to try and find. Okay, where are we at?
A framework of different programs.
Right. Okay, here we go. This will do it. We touched on particles. So let's play They Might Be Giants with Particle Man. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. I'm going to try and do better. Anna looks very confused. So that means Anna is my canary.
A measure of how well you're explaining.
And I'm not doing it very well this week. I'll do better next week, hopefully. Okay.
What's the topic for next week?
Particle Man.
Next week. What's the topic for next week? We're going to continue talking about light and electromagnetism.
Atomic bomb.
We'll do the atomic bomb next week.